Welcome to Washington in Focus, your source for the week's top stories in the state of Washington. I'm Cole McNeely, filling in as guest host this week. Coming up, we'll be discussing legislation dubbed by some as the Natural Gas Ban Bill, the Department of Ecology's first carbon auction in 2024, and off to Seattle, where the Seattle Police Department's staffing levels are at their lowest in some 30-odd years. That's ahead on Washington in Focus. I'm Cole McNeely.
Some people would call him a loser. He ran for state office. He was beaten. He started a business. He failed. He ran for Congress. He lost. He was nominated for vice president. He lost again. But he knew only those who never tried are the real losers. And Abraham Lincoln was no loser. Persistence. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Welcome back to Washington in Focus. I'm Cole McNeely. Now let's jump into the headlines. Legislation dubbed by some as the Natural Gas Ban Bill and a hot mess by Lieutenant Governor Danny Heck last week passed the Washington State Legislature early Wednesday morning. Capitol reporter Carlene Johnson covered this story. First off, Carlene, let's give listeners an idea of exactly what this is.
So it comes as a result of the Climate Commitment Act here in Washington State, which may or may not end up being repealed by voters when it goes to the ballot in November. But assuming that it stays put as is, this is an attempt for Puget Sound Energy, the largest utility provider here in the state of Washington, to begin to phase out natural gas. It was just 10 years ago. This was, you know, clean. It's like replace coal and clean, you know, natural gas is great. And a lot of us, including myself, heat our homes with natural gas or turn on our, stove with natural gas. This is the beginning of PSE phasing it out as part of the climate commitment agenda and sort of, you know, the pet legacy, if you will, for outgoing Governor Jay Inslee. So this would allow PSE to go to the Utilities and Transportation Commission and say, okay, we need to start to phase out natural gas in any kind of new construction. And of course, you've got the Building Industry Association up in arms about this, saying this is going to ban natural gas for current and future PSE customers. And you don't think this is going to inflate the cost of building a new construction as well as phasing out current homeowners? It's going to be exorbitant, opponents say, for utility bills, yet to be signed by the governor, but it did pass.
So what, when you say phasing out, that's an interesting phrase. So phasing out, what does that mean from a practical aspect?
Well, the bill's ultimately going to ban, they don't give a timeline, but it will ultimately ban natural gas for all current and future Puget Sound Energy customers. And according to BIAW, the Building Industry Association of Washington, so if you say you've got a natural gas fireplace, a lot of us have changed out, right? We've got natural gas fireplace, flick a switch, it's real nice. Even when the electricity goes out, I got it right there. You won't have a source for heat anymore. They're going to stop making the parts for those under this legislation. So, in addition, it doesn't give a timeline for this, but it's talking about paying to convert your entire system to electricity. And according to BIAW, those of us that, you know, have heat source of natural gas, that could be upwards of $40,000 to $50,000 per household. So again, not just for new construction, but for those of us that already have that as a source of electricity in our homes, phasing it out could be that expensive.
And there is legal challenges that are coming. Do we still expect to see those rates go up just purely from the anticipation of a potential ban?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Earlier this week, we at the Center Square spoke to outgoing Senate Majority Leader Andy Billig, who supported the measure. And we asked him very specifically, we're hearing that PSE is going to kind of build this in, anticipating these are going to be the costs and this is what we're going to need to pass on to consumers. So let's start to build those inflated rates up, even though we haven't done anything yet infrastructure wise. Now, again, the legislation it leaves a lot of wiggle room there. But he said, no, that's definitely not going to happen. There was no sense that that's going to happen. This could be years out. We spoke to some Republican leaders earlier in the week, said, it may certainly take a few years before any person, say citizen me, who goes, okay, my rates went crazy, I've been harmed by this, I've got standing for a lawsuit. So then it goes to litigation. Whether or not in the meantime, they can raise rates anyway in anticipation, having attached the emergency clause to this measure, they certainly could do that. Now, ultimately, you've got the UTC having to approve rates going up or down. Republicans say that the UTC is basically a rubber stamp for the governor. Billig, in that conversation we had earlier this week with him and the Senate Democrats, he said, no, that's not the case. In fact, there's a member of the UTC that is specifically there for ratepayers and to try and hold rates down. So he says it's not going to happen. I guess we'll just wait and see once the governor signs this thing.
But UTC, so Utilities and Transportation Company, they still have the ultimate say in rate increases, correct?
They do, but they are already on the record during public testimony over this legislation. And if any of our any of the listeners want to look it up, it is HB 1589. You can kind of look up the series of amendments that were offered by Republicans, all of which were rejected ultimately. But according to UTC and their comments to Puget Sound Energy, basically UTC says, we're going to do whatever you want us to do. If this is what is necessary to move us toward the climate commitment goals that have been set and CCA, you know, certain lowering of emissions by 2030, which is not so far out there now, then we'll do what is necessary. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And if UTC comes out more on the side of the ratepayer saying, whoa, wait a minute, you know, we don't have anything to replace natural gas yet, let's not start jacking rates up. Or they're simply our rubber stamp to go, okay, this is the direction we've all agreed to save the planet. So, you know, we're in line lockstep. That's going to be interesting to watch.
Carlene, you may not know the answer to this, but is Washington and the state of Washington, are they a trailblazer when it comes to state governments of really doing this sort of, again, it's being called a natural gas ban bill. You said that they're phasing it out. Are they one of the first in the nation? Have we seen this done elsewhere, tried elsewhere? Is there any track record of this having any sort of success?
Yeah, that is a question I don't have the answer to as far as a movement away from natural gas and a ban. But our outgoing, very left-leaning, the Democrat governor, Jay Inslee, you know, has made no secret. I mean, he ran his short-lived presidential campaign a few years back to, you know, say, this is it. We're going to save the planet. It's going to start right here in Washington State. And we are ready to step up and do our part. We being the taxpayer that, you know, those of us that have seen inflated gas prices because of CCA this year to the tune of $800 to $1,000 more per driver, multiply that by most of us have at least two drivers in our homes, right? You know, the question of whether we are all on board with this or not, the taxpayer, no matter what it is, that remains to be seen. But this is his legacy. He says Washington State is leading the way in climate commitment goals. And whether or not anybody else is following along with a natural gas ban bill, I don't know. That's very interesting and something that we should follow up on for sure.
Now I want to ask you, Carlene, because this is a fantastic quote that you included in your article at thecentersquare.com. Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck called this a, quote, hot mess. You got to give me some context around why did he call it a hot mess?
And I got to tell you, that was remarkable. I didn't hear about that until the next morning, but this was after the measure or just prior to the final vote on the full floor of the Washington State Senate. Denny Heck, certainly not a conservative by any stretch of the imagination, but he stood up there before his full body and said, this thing is so constitutionally flawed the way it is written. There are so many things already in state statute that are going to be called, and rightly so, he said, constitutionally into litigation that it won't stand, saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, you may be well-intentioned with all this, and so we might be able to go this path. But right now, we're not anywhere near that. This thing is a disaster. And he urged members to just basically pull it and not even offer that final vote. Ultimately, it did pass the Senate. Then it goes over to the House. And last week ended up being debated until the wee hours of the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning before final passage. And that was only because there were 4 to 6 holdout Democrats who said, whoa, 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 my constituents don't like this thing at all. I'm not a yes vote. But what the House Speaker did at that point is one by one, pull those members into her office, midnight, 1, 2 a.m., and say, listen, we need your support for this, whatever arm twisting went on or not, that was behind closed doors. But there were literally tears from some members, some Democrats who ultimately did support this, saying, I'm a reluctant yes on this. So this was those comments from Denny Heck were something I've never seen from him before in all the years, he's been presiding.
Natural gas under the microscope in the state of Washington. Carlene Johnson, thank you very much. You listeners can keep up with that story and more at thecentersquare.com. Now we're going to head over and talk with the Washington editor for the Center Square, Brett Davis. Brett, you've talked about this many times before on Washington in Focus. We have covered this extensively at the Center Square, these carbon auctions in the state of Washington. The Department of Ecology actually held the first carbon auction of 2024 on March 6th, and the results were released on the 13th. For those not familiar, what exactly is the carbon auction? Let's start with that. And how much revenue did the latest one generate here?
Sure. So carbon auctions are a result of the Climate Commitment Act, which was passed by the legislature in 2021 and signed into law by Governor Jay Inslee. The CCA, it sets a statewide cap on greenhouse gas emissions that steadily lowers over time. A market has been established where businesses, they buy pollution allowances that are supposed to become more expensive in order to incentivize cuts in greenhouse gas emissions, as well as raise money for fighting climate change and clean energy programs. So you mentioned the most recent cap and trade auction on March 6th. It sold some 4.7 million allowances at a final settlement price of $25.76 to bring in about $192 million. Now that's on top of the more than $2 billion that was brought in total by last year's carbon auctions. Now, what's interesting about this most recent auction is the final settlement price of nearly $26. That's way lower than the last settlement price of the last auction of the previous year, which was $51.89. So basically it was cut in half. And that probably has something to do with Initiative 2117, which will be on the ballot in November's general election.
Right. And Brett, isn't this make the entire carbon auction put under a certain amount of threat if Initiative 2117 actually passes?
So Initiative 2117 would repeal the CCA and prohibit state agencies from implementing any sort of carbon tax in place of the repealed CCA. So it's basically a modern day sword of Damocles that's hanging over the entire program. And given the results of this first auction with the lower settlement price, it's not unreasonable to see this as a signal that bidders think the initiative is going to pass in November.
There are several factors at play here regarding Washington's. You got a kind of a controversial cap and trade program. Tell us a little bit more about those.
Right. So also happening at this time is the former Washington State Department of Transportation economist Scott Smith. He recently filed a whistleblower complaint in Thurston County Superior Court. He alleges he was fired after refusing to keep quiet about his calculations last year, showing Washington's cap and trade program would increase gas prices by 45 to 50 cents per gallon. Governor Inslee had predicted, he was on record as constantly saying, consumers would see a cost increase of only pennies at the pump. And, you know, he blamed oil industry profits as a cause of high gas prices. Our gas prices last year for a short time were the highest in the nation. Estimates on the CCA's impact on gas prices range anywhere from, you know, a low of 20 cents per gallon all the way up to the aforementioned 50 cents per gallon. So that's kind of a big deal to consumers. Also going on with the Climate Commitment Act is Washington's carbon market. Efforts are ongoing to link Washington's carbon market to the joint California-Quebec market. The thinking behind that is linking to a larger market would bring stability and, you know, incentivize businesses to increase investments to curb their greenhouse gas emissions. Ecology released a report last October that basically said failure to link to a larger market could end up dooming the entire program. And this legislative session, Senate Bill 6058 was passed to help facilitate linking Washington's carbon market to California and Quebec. I don't think the governor has signed it yet, but he's expected to sign it.
And it sounds like this carbon market it's on assault, you know, it's kind of taking assault rather on multiple fronts. Kind of going forward here, Brent, what is the path forward? What should, you know, the people of Washington expect from this program?
Right. It's really hard to say right now. There are a lot of moving parts, as you can tell, related to Washington's carbon market, but it could turn out that voters end up having the final say when they cast their ballots in November. So, you know, it could be over for the carbon market in November. We'll just have to wait and see.
How much of this is politics versus policy right now? I mean, how much of this is actually people trying to put in policy versus, as Carlene mentioned, you have an outgoing governor, Jay Inslee, trying to maintain a legacy?
It's hard to assign percentages.
It's a loaded question. I didn't say it was an easy one.
I think the people pushing these policies are true believers. I think they actually believe what they're saying. I'm not sure how much that comports with reality, but that's just my opinion. A lot of times politicians don't let reality get in the way of their preferred policies. So maybe that's what's going on here. That's just speculation on my part.
Yeah, pure speculation. I asked Brett a question that we did not prep to ask him, and I just went for it. So good job, Brett.
Hey, oh, no, politicians might get mad at me.
Appreciate you. Thanks for filling us in on this evolving story. Keep up with this at thecentersquare.com. This carbon story has been a story for a long time and will continue to be a story in the state of Washington. So thank you, Brett. Yep. Now off to Seattle, where Seattle Police Department staffing levels are at their lowest levels in some 30 years, despite actions taken by the city to try to boost those numbers of officers. Washington reporter Spencer Pauly is joining us to discuss this. Spencer, let's start off with this. How many officers does the department currently have, and how many officers have they lost in recent years?
Sure. So an entry-level position, anyone who's trying to become an officer, if they're just doing an entry-level, they would get $83,000 base salary working for the Seattle Police Department. Now, that is ranked 15th in the Puget Sound region for entry-level base salaries. In context, the city of Redmond, just east of Seattle, ranks first at $101,844 salary, followed by Kent at $96,000 and then the city of Bellevue, just east of Lake Washington, at $95,000. So Seattle is just kind of in the middle range right there, and that could be an issue as well. Now, Seattle implemented hiring incentives to try to include people into the force, but so have a bunch of other cities within the Puget Sound region that are also seeing short staffs. So
let me stop you there, Spencer. So you mentioned this recruitment and retention plan. What did that entail? I mean, what did they do or try to do to bring more officers into Seattle?
Sure. So the Seattle Police and Recruitment and Retention Plan originated in 2022 and is set out to get a goal of net gain of 500 officers. Now, obviously, that hasn't worked. And notably, this plan costs about $5 million through 2025. Now, what this plan sets out to do is that it looks to provide incentives. So any recruits gets $7,500 if they come into the department, or if there are lateral transfers, they can receive $30,000 one-time payment for coming in. But so do a lot of other departments within the Puget Sound region. So there causes a lot of competition here. But basically trying to provide any kind of incentives to bring people in, they've increased, ad campaigns throughout to try to bring people in. And they've looked out of state because of the competition within, the city and within the region. So looking out of state for any kind of hires they can find. A lot of issues here, though. So the police, as of right now, the police recruitment and retention plan isn't quite working as planned.
So it isn't quite working. Do we have numbers as to how much it isn't quite working?
I mean, just based on the levels alone, that we lost over 725 officers instead of getting a net positive of 500.
That's a pretty good indication.
Yeah, absolutely. And, as I said, at the beginning here, the staffing levels are this lowest since the department first started keeping track of these statistics in the 1990s. Now, there are plenty of incidences that kind of divide the city and the police department. Most notable one that's happened recently is when an officer struck and killed a 20-year-old student in the city of Seattle, and one officer not reporting on the case, said off mic on his body camera that her life had limited value. Now, he said that was taken out of context, but at the same time, we're seeing a lot of public outrage against this, calling for his name. And it's causing tensions within the department about, if they mess up, if at any point that, the public will be after them and call out their name and, you know, get them in any kind of danger.
Yeah, I'm not a mathematician or anything of the sort, but I did look it up. Negative numbers are less than positive numbers, so I think your analysis is correct on the state of police hiring in Seattle. So obviously the shortage of Seattle police officers, it has a byproduct, right? I mean, these things don't happen in a vacuum. What is the impact of a lack of officers in the city of Seattle? What does it actually look like on the ground? You're in Seattle, so you can speak to this.
Well, you're not going to get any proactive policing. You're getting officers who were investigators, detectives, worked in, you know, special departments within the police department. They're now being forced to go back to on-duty patrol, which they may not have done in years. And it's because of the lack of staffing. And, you know, at the end of the day, we need more people patrolling. And so that further ruins morale for these officers, because Chief Adrian Diaz, during this committee meeting, when he talked about these new staffing levels, he said a lot of people join the Seattle Police Department because there's more opportunities to do specialty work. You know, we're doing investigations, whatnot. But now that there's just such a very minimal staff, we're going to see all these people just doing, you know, regular patrol work that is exhausting. It's dangerous, and it's, you know, further exasperated when, you know, the city hates officers, it seems like.
Crime is obviously, that has been a big topic of conversation in Seattle. It has been for a long time. Homelessness has been on the rise in Seattle. Drug use has been on the rise in Seattle. These are all things that I think are easy to see when the lack of officers are there. And I can't help but think that some of those things also contribute to maybe officers not wanting to be there as much. And so is there any path forward here for the city of Seattle, where they're having homeless issues, crime issues, drug issues, community and police relationship issues, combined with poor recruiting of police officers? What's the next steps? Or is there any, you know, is there another plan to try to bring more people into the fold looking into the end of 2024, going into 2025?
Well, I think to answer your question, the city is doing a different kind of strategy to address, say, homelessness, people that are having behavioral health crises that maybe, you know, police officers aren't really trained to handle. So Seattle is looking to have mental health experts be on scene instead and handle some of these, you know, cases of crime where, you know, a homeless person or someone who is overdosed is causing some kind of disturbance. They can send them instead of a police officer. That way these officers can handle more important crimes being committed within the city. Now, to help with hirings, I know during this committee meeting that they said that they're just going to keep looking outside the state and, you know, try to recruit people in to show, you know, that Seattle is this great spot. That's, you know, this big city. There's so much to do here. And kind of recruit people out that way. And I think that will be the way we see how, you know, we can address crime and homelessness with a different kind of police force, I guess, per se, and then also just boosting the police force by just continuing to look out of state with these hiring incentives and whatnot.
This is a complex issue beyond police recruiting, and it's going to have complex solutions to actually address this anyway. Spencer, I appreciate you joining us today to talk about this, and a big thank you to all of our journalists for sharing their stories. Stay up to date with all of these and more at thecentersquare.com. I'm Cole McNeely, and until next time, this has been Washington in Focus.